Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. You can find me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. I'm managing editor of The Texans Wire, part of the USA Today Sports Network. You can find us online at texanswire.usatoday.com, on Twitter at The Texans Wire, and I'm always joined by John Crumpler. Hey, John, where can they find you on Twitter?
My name is John Crumpler. I'm a contributor here at the Texans Wire, and you can find me at John H. Crumpler on Twitter. Give me a follow. I've got something exciting coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I think he's the big deal. That's what I think he is. I think he's the big deal on Texans Wire. That's just I'm biased, though.
Mark, you run the show. We all know that. Ain't no one that can aggregate like Mark Lane. If it's about the Texans, you find it. You find it, and it's on our website.
There you go. That's right. If it's about the Texans, it's on Texans Wire. And one of the stories that I had to publish this week was the Houston Texans being named as plaintiffs I get it so confused in civil court, and I should not because it's the same. Named as defendants in the most recent Deshaun Watson civil suit. They were named as defendants. Toy Gardner, I apologize if I'm saying her name incorrectly. She filed suit, also represented by Tony Busby. Basically, the claim is that the Texans knew and may have been helping. And basically, how could they have not known? And I think it's kind of a pretty strong argument because these organizations, I mean, I don't care who you are, what the sport is, when there's this level of money and commitment involved, and in this case with Deshaun Watson, was about to be involved because of the pending contract extension, you would have to figure the Texans knew in some way. What I think is intriguing, what Mike Meltzer from, who's an attorney, part of the Mad Dog Radio Sports Network, and like I said, he's looked at this. He joined In the Loop, and he's talked about how the Texans may have known, but there may also be kind of like evidence to suggest that they then cleaned house and tried to have sort of plausible deniability about it. But nevertheless, I think it'll be interesting to see how the Texans handle this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a fold into the Deshaun Watson situation that none of us really could have expected. I mean, I guess we could have. It is odd, like you said, when there is this much money involved, when there is $200 million or close to it on Houston's part, you would think that they would know what their player is doing. But it is interesting because it's civil court, so they don't have to prove anything. They just need to, I believe it's 50%? It's more likely than not that it happened. But did the Texans know the extent that Deshaun Watson was doing these things? And this is a very sensitive topic. I don't like to speculate or really go too far into it. But it's going to be very fascinating to watch how the Texans play their cards here. Do they quickly settle this? Because this could be damaging for both them and the league, not to mention the repercussions of the trade that they executed, but also just how they're going to navigate this.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a problem, a mistake in the Cal McNair ownership with regards to Deshaun Watson. I actually wrote about that, six mistakes from the Cal McNair era that have wrecked the Texans. And for me, it's number four, because you can find that on Texans. Just put that into Google and you can find it on Texans Wire. And basically, all of this was going on. It started as far back March 2020. And, you know, how come the Texans weren't doing a little more research into Watson, because I can tell you right now, and I almost hate making these kind of comparisons every week, but I'm the problem, I admit it. When the Dallas Cowboys were about to sign Dez Bryant, the receiver, to a big extension in the 2015 offseason, they did everything they could to just find out everything they could about him before making kind of this renewal of vows. And that's where the Dez tape and all that came from. And so that's what I'm saying is, it just feels like the Texans didn't do all of their homework, or if they did, then they like tried to back out of it a little bit. But then in doing so, they went ahead, and it's just, it is, I think, even nasty. Just from a logical sense, it makes sense to include them as defendants just to see, you know, what they did know and when did they know it and how did they respond to it.
What I might say in regards to the Dez Bryant comparison in 2015, so I think the big difference, and when you look at the Watson 2019 extension, is that Watson was a player who was going to correlate so dramatically to winning, towards your franchise being a playoff contender. Dez Bryant was a very nice receiver. He had a wonderful career in Dallas. But I think Deshaun represented such a talent and such a franchise-altering presence that the Texans really might have been inclined that if they found something they didn't like, to not fully explore it or to turn away, which is really sad. And that's, I mean, the business of football, we see it in so many different ways, whether it's guys getting hurt, whether it's suspensions for things that seem wrong and they don't really seem to correlate. Like, hey, how is this guy already back? Football's a business and winning is a business in that, right? So it's hard for me to compare it to anything, because I can't think of anyone of Watson's caliber that has had this level of a problem for a team to have to investigate. And that's a tough decision, because what are you going to do? Are you going to let Deshaun Watson walk? And that's where I hope the truth comes out on this, because, Mark, I don't think it's going to affect Houston's product on the football field, but what it is going to do is it's going to affect women. It's going to affect how the NFL handles its players in the future in terms of how the personal conduct policy can be implied and what the expectations are. So really, and the expectations for its clubs and the club's owners. So I do hope they get to the bottom of this, because something is fishy. I agree with you. Even if they did nothing wrong, I think everyone should know just where Houston was when this was going on. 66 different masseuses.
What's unfortunate about it is it just doesn't feel like there are any winners to come out of this. The women, they've stood up, they've had the courage, some of them, you know, put their names out there, but it's just, there's no winners, there's no, you know, restoration, completion of what happened, you know what I mean? Like, it just can't get snapped away, and that to me is the worst part about all of this, is just the brokenness and the hurt from all of it. And that's why I hope it's just a cautionary tale for male athletes to not abuse their status in such a way. And I hope it's an inspiration for women to speak out and to not be afraid of the perceived power, to just proceed with confidence and in the truth.
Yeah, there's not going to be a resolution where people feel good. This is a nasty, feel bad situation, and rightfully so. But I agree with you. I hope that it is handled and carried and delivered in such a way that it sets a precedent that something like this cannot happen again. Because it's a really sore eye for America's most popular pastime. It's a sore eye for obviously the clubs, the owners, everyone involved for it. And it's because this should never happen. So I'm glad the Texans are listed because the truth should be heard.
Yes, and that will be meted out in a court of law on the football field, or at least in Pro Football Focus. The Houston Texans linebacking core was ranked 31st in the NFL. So let me ask you, John, do you think that they're really only better than the Atlanta Falcons linebacking core?
No, I mean, I don't think they're super high, but I think that lists like this always undervalue consistent veteran playmakers, and they overvalue really talented guys who haven't popped yet. And the matter of fact is the Texans linebackers aren't going to be very sexy aside from third round pick Christian Harris. I think he could have a big impact, and he brings a different skill set from the other linebackers in terms of a pass rushing ability and just some athleticism we haven't seen from that position. But Christian Kirksey and Kamu Grugier-Hill are fine B-minus linebackers who are going to be in a scheme that it asks a lot for them, but they're very good in those defined roles. I expect Houston's linebacking core to perform better than the 31st in the league. What would you say?
Yeah, in that particular write-up from Pro Football Focus, it didn't reference Kamu Grugier-Hill, and that to me was surprising because he's the freaking face of the linebacking core, and it'd be one thing if he excelled, he did great, and now he's with the Dayton Triangles this season. No, he came back to the Texans. So he's in year two of the Lovie Smith system, and they added Christian Harris. So, Garrett Wallow, but I don't really expect everybody to know about Garrett Wallow. Just everyone with an 832 and 713 area code. And a 936 area code, too. But, so that's why I was like, really, 31st? I think at best, they're in the middle of the pack, upper teens. I think realistically, they're probably maybe 24th.
Yes, that sounds right. And that sounds just about right. With, like you said, with the chance to go up to a 17 or an 18, if Christian Harris is able to find a role, and again, we didn't really watch the linebackers be used and how he plays, and if, as you also mentioned, Garrett Wallow, if he's what Nick Caserio is preaching, we could have two linebackers starting who are not veterans. It's just going to be interesting to see how they get Wallow and Harris involved. But even beyond that, Kirksey and Kamu Grugier-Hill are year two in systems and roles that they know and that they performed admirably in last year. I don't understand or see how this could be the worst linebacking corps or the second worst in the
league. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think if they are able to have Grugier-Hill, Harris, and Kirksey, and Wallow stepping up, I think people may be surprised by this linebacking core. You know, if they're able to, you know, scrape and stop the run, have a little good coverage out there, make some plays, I think they'll surprise some people.
Oh, that whole defense could, Mark. I think they're a little more talented than you expect at every position, just because in this league, veterans on third and fourth contracts are undervalued. And I understand that they're done. That happens because Super Bowls are the goal of the sport, and those guys generally are not what you need. You need star players or at least good level starters. But it kind of reminds me of when Jacksonville played Houston last year, and Jacksonville was a favorite in week one. And people just dramatically underestimated how many veterans Houston had and how young the guys they were playing against. And it does create this floor where it's harder for you to get embarrassed.
Yeah, and so it's just really going to have to take everybody just seeing the Texans beat a few good teams. I think if the Chargers game would have happened earlier in the year, then people would have taking the Texans a little bit more seriously. I also think a lot of the Texans situation from a media perspective is they're in a fishbowl. So you've got the local media does a good job covering the Texans. Then you got the national media that has to go through, you know, what are the Green Bay Packers doing, and what happened over here with the Raiders, and the Patriots are doing this, and, you know, Jacksonville did that. And so when you're having to just keep up with all 32 teams, and then there's this outfit that is going with Lovie Smith again and was a four-win team the past 2 years and traded their star quarterback, and, you know, who they got, David Mills. And so I think they're a 3-14 team. And I think a lot of that just permeates the analysis for the Texans. Unless people really dive in. And you can tell when people really dive in on the Texans, they will say, you know what, I think that Laremy Tunsil is actually pretty good. Or this Dameon Pierce is really going to take advantage of the situation. Watch for him as a waiver wire type guy near the end of the year in your fantasy football.
A great example is one of my favorite guests that Colin Cowherd has on pretty routinely. Greg Cosell does a great job breaking down.
Who?
Greg Cosell.
Oh, Greg Cosell, yeah, so yes.
Greg Cosell's been at it a long time. And he was on this week, and he talked about the Texans are going to win more games than people expect. And he brought up Davis Mills, the last six games, what he saw on film. He talked about the rookie class, how impressive that draft looks. If you dive in, but nobody wants to dive in because there's not a real sexy headliner. We might have the net to cast, but there's no hook. There's no hook yet to really draw people in. But when they do check out the team, I think it's hard to say they're going to be as bad as people are saying right now.
Yeah, and there's really no identifiable, there's no face of the franchise like there used to be. Take your pick between J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, there's no face of the franchise anymore. I mean, you really have to kind of stick your neck out to say it's Davis Mills.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, that's fair that you have to do that right now. I'm not quite sure he's there. I think he has a great opportunity to be. But yeah, right now the Houston Texans are being punished for not having a face and for some of these really public divorces. I think the Hopkins trade was ugly. Releasing J.J. Watt to watch him go follow Hopkins was some bad optics. And then, of course, the Deshaun divorce. It's just it's hard for the national media to put favorable coverage on Houston. And hopefully that turns around if they start playing well this season.
Yes, it very well could. And if it does, you will have teams poaching the Texans' assistant coaches for other jobs. And this is what Lovie Smith talked about, was that every job is a job interview. And so for a lot of these guys, we know that Pep Hamilton, he's going to be on everybody's radar. Okay. But when you look at the rest of the coaching staff, who are some guys that jump out to you that this might be an opportunity for them to make noise this season? And then they're not, maybe not a head coaching candidate, but a defensive coordinator or a special teams coach, or maybe an offensive coordinator.
So I'll take two of the assistant coaches. They're both going to be on defense. Linebackers coach Miles Smith and cornerbacks coach Dino Vasso. I'll start with Smith. I think Smith has a really good opportunity to show that he can develop players to being NFL caliber linebackers. He's got this project from 2021 class, Garrett Wallow, who all of a sudden is the talk of the camp. If Wallow's a full-time starter at strong side linebacker and that unit's performing, I think that's a huge credit to him. Christian Harris, coming out of the draft, he had an excellent freshman year at Alabama, but he's seen as a little raw. He needs work on the fundamentals, specifically his tackling and some of the angles that he chooses. If Christian Harris is a full-time starter at the end of this year, I think Smith's going to get a lot of credit. And then just knowing how and where to play those veterans and how to booster them. And then on the other side, the cornerbacks, the presence of Stingley and Tavier Thomas suggests to me that the Houston Texans corners could be the group on the team that overperforms relative to expectations. I think people know Stingley's talented, but they haven't been reminded of how talented he is for quite some time. Nobody in America outside the Houston area code knows who Tavier Thomas is. People have forgotten who Desmond King is. Steven Nelson was fine for the Eagles last year. If that group is respectable, which don't get me wrong, they'll need a lot of help from the safeties, I think Vaso's going to get some looks of, okay, what could he do with more defensive responsibility?
Yeah, kind of like a Jonathan Gannon situation. I think someone else that, okay, your people that you picked, I was going to go with Miles Smith because I really do. I think there's a key thing. I think we wrote about it at Texans Wire. I know I transcribed it from his availability on February the 22nd of this year when they had the assistant coach availability. Miles Smith talked about how it was when Lovie Smith did an interview with Jeremy Poplin in sports radio in Tulsa. That's where it was from, and it was from February around the same time. But Lovie Smith said that if anything happened to him, like in a COVID situation, Miles Smith would run the defense. And so I think not just from – it partially is – it's kind of like a Bum Phillips, Wade Phillips situation. But I think just from that responsibility that Miles Smith is going to be around, I think that's going to elevate him in some people's eyes because they're going to see it's not because he's a coach's kid, a la Wade Phillips. It's because he's that good. And that's how Wade Phillips went from, I believe, forget where he went after the Oilers. No, yeah, he went to the Saints. Then when he was done with the Saints and his father, then Buddy Ryan takes him. Now he's running that 46 defense with the Eagles. And I think a similar situation could happen is Miles Smith could have the opportunity to make a name for himself, particularly if that linebacking core, the 31st in the league, is playing very well. My second is Ben McDaniels, the wide receivers, pass game coordinator. He's Josh McDaniels' little brother. But I think if this passing attack is off the charts, even if they're not winning games, but Davis Mills is doing that 38-10 TD INT ratio, and the receivers look good, and Nico Collins is doing well, and John Mechie's the future, I think that will get him some looks to be somebody's offensive coordinator. And he comes out from under the shadow of Pep Hamilton.
The one thing about picking an offensive coach that I struggle with is I do think that Pep, more so than Lovie, is going to absorb a lot of the light. If the defense is bad, if the offense is bad, Pep is going to get crushed. But if the offense is good, Pep already kind of has this locomotion building, this steam that he could be a head coaching candidate. And I think he would get assigned a lot of the responsibility. But I guess when I say that out loud, that means there's going to be a vacuum for people on his staff to step up. I do think you're right. If that passing game excels and Davis Mills takes it to the next level after being written off as the sixth best quarterback in his class, there's nothing this league loves more than young offensive coaches who've done something impressive.
Yeah, and I agree with you when it comes to offensive candidates, because you take a look at it, Danny Barrett, running backs coach, I mean, they rarely have any kind of advancement up to the offensive coordinator level. Usually these guys are just kind of career position coaches. Tim Bourbonnick, I think he's somebody, the tight ends coach, that would follow Pep Hamilton wherever. George Warhop, he's a lifer at offensive line if you look at his background. And then Hal Hunter, Denarius McGee, Robbie Picazio, Ted White, who helps with the quarterbacks. I think they're still a little too callow. And so they probably won't get those chances. So that's why I had to go with Ben McDaniels after you stole Miles Smith from me.
Well, I'm sorry, Mark. You know, never mean to steal your thunder, but that's a good rationale behind your pick. I wish.
Oh, wait, I forgot. I actually didn't give a second. Sean Baker, I'm picking him as the assistant special teams coach. He's only been assistant special teams coach with Frank Ross for 1 year. This will be his second year, but he played ball. And so I think that helps in terms of experience. So if someone really wanted to take a chance on young staff, or maybe a situation, you know, like I said, young staff, like kind of like Frank Ross, then they hire Sean Baker. So I'm going with Ben McDaniels and Sean Baker as my two guys.
All right, I'm going to stick with the defense because I just think Pep Hamilton takes all the offense. But we've got some good choices here. I like the staff that Lovey has. I have more faith in it than last year's, that's for sure.
Yes, and I think Texans fans also have a lot more faith in the tackle situation because at left tackle, two-time Pro Bowler Laremy Tunsil, right tackle, former first-round pick from 2019, Titus Howard. And as your swing tackle, you have Charlie Heck. And the thing with the former 2020 fourth rounder from North Carolina is that he played 15 games and started in 13 of them last year. So he's really battle tested at tackle. But if it's Howard on the right, Tunsil on the left, what happens to Heck? Do you think that he's just going to be the swing tackle all year?
Yeah, I think you have to have a discussion with Heck and ask what his priorities are. If he feels the most comfortable at tackle and he doesn't expect to be a starter right now, I think an obvious solution presents itself with right now they have good solutions at left guard, right guard, and center that they should leave Heck. And if someone goes down with an injury, which based on last year, I'm not expecting to get 17 games out of Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. You don't get that lucky in this league. It's a long season. You have Heck as a high-quality backup ready to come in, someone who can work with a six-round pick, Austin Deculus. But maybe you do give him the option to ask if he wants to play for guard. And I do think at that left guard spot I think it's the right guard spot where AJ Cann is going to be, maybe he could push him if he wanted to transition. But otherwise, I'm completely fine leaving Heck on the depth chart as a tackle. What about you?
All right, let me throw this scenario out there for you. It's the end of preseason. You need to cut down to 53 men. And there's a team calling because they need a tackle because theirs got injured. Do you make the deal? Do you flip Charlie Heck for a draft pick?
How high is this draft pick? Because, well, you know what? I'm going to leave it at that, and then I'm going to ask another follow-up.
Fifth.
Okay. How well?
Okay, let's fifth in 23.
Okay, and how well did Deculus play in the preseason?
That's what will be contingent on for you. That's the formula.
That's the formula for me. It's you look at the compensation, and then you look at the rest of your depth chart. Because what we're talking about here when it comes to, in my opinion, guys that are not starters, the backups, it's about, okay, what is the difference between you and the person behind you, that second and that third string guy? Because if I can pick up an additional asset and I think it's replacement level, I'm going to have practically the same player, then of course I'm going to take the pick. But if Deculus, you know, if he gets into training camp and there's a reason he was a sixth rounder despite starting 4 years at LSU, if they say, oh, he really doesn't have the foot speed for this league, or oh, he can't keep up here, then maybe I do keep Heck, because a swing tackle that can play the left or the right if someone goes down is pretty valuable. And, you know, if we trade for the fifth rounder, Nick Caserio is just going to deal it during the draft anyways.
Right, and that's what Nick Caserio has helped me look at the draft as. Well, draft picks is that's capital to build packages to go get your guy. So it doesn't mean you got to spend that fifth rounder, you can use that and then boom, go get a guy because you built a package. So that's, like I said, that would be one reason why you trade Charlie Heck. But I think you did lay down some really good parameters, because if, let's say, I don't mean to, but let's just say someone's hamstring at tackle is just not quite up to snuff, you know, and it's a preseason storyline and, you know, it's day to day and all that stuff. And then it becomes the first 2 weeks type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think you definitely need Charlie Heck and not a fifth round pick, no matter how well Austin Deculus is playing, even if he's making the preseason competition look like Vanderbilt.
Well, if he's doing that, Mark, let's be realistic. If Deculus is that good, then I'm going to be okay. I think Deculus is more important than the compensation, but what the Texans cannot do, and you would agree with this, is put Davis Mills in a situation where if he wants to take a five-step drop back, he's going to get sacked. This season, really the biggest thing that's going to come from this year is watching how Davis Mills develops and how he can lead that offense in seemingly a better scheme, better supporting cast, year two. Can he put it all together? And it's really hard for a young guy to put it all together if his tackles cannot hold up against just how fast these NFL edge rushers are.
Yeah, and not to make this a Davis Mills show again, but when you look at just the offensive roster construction, it really does look like they're trying to eliminate every excuse for why he fails. Just from a roster construction. I mean, the season will present its own things. But in terms of, well, he didn't have a good offensive line. Oh, really? Well, he has Tytus Howard, Laremy Tunsil, Kenyon Green, A.J. Cann, who's a pet cat of the offensive line coach, Justin Britt. Well, he's got no run game. Well, there's Damian Pierce, all right, the fourth-round pick. Well, there's no weapons. There's still Brandon Cooks that they did an extension with, and there's Nico Collins.
There's enough.
And John Metchie.
None of its eliteness is.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, all the they've eliminated all the excuses, you know, on the roster construction end of it.
You can't really point to any hole on the roster anymore. I still think there are guys that you'd like to have a better player. You know, I'd like to have someone a little more reliable, potentially, than A.J. Cann. Nico Collins has the potential. But in a perfect world, I think you'd like to have a little more proven production at someone who you're really going to lean on to be your wide receiver too. I think you'd like for Mechie not to be coming off of a pretty serious injury. You know, Damian Pierce, Marlon Mack, that's a good duo. Things could be better, but nothing is bad. I agree with what you're saying. You're not going to point to anything and say, this is crippling. And of course, that could change as the season goes on. We don't know how injuries are going to affect that. But from the onset, and with what he gets to practice in training camp, they're evaluating him in a vacuum right now where they should, and I believe can believe, that they've given him enough tools to succeed.
Yes, and that's why there's this interminable lull until training camp. But I appreciate it, because before you know it, the NFL season will be upon us, kind of like a tidal wave, or you look up in the sky as an ancient with no concept of astronomy. Oh, look, it's a big burning ball. Oh, it's not the sun. I guess we're just going to die.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it'll be honest like that.
It was a lot. I'm kind of enjoying the time off. You and me both worked our tails off about the draft, the Senior Bowl, everything in between, the Deshaun Watson trade saga. I mean, it was a long offseason. I'm enjoying these 2 months of rest before we're right back at it. Although I will say, I'm excited to start hearing from the fans again. It's almost too quiet, but I'm trying to take the season for what it is.
Yeah, and like I said, before you know it, this season will be on you like sizzling chicken fajitas from the other side of the restaurant.
Mark, sorry, I was trying to unmute there. How do you make everything about food that's not about food? It's so impressive.
Because I come from a family that's all about food. Like, they, when they plan their family reunions and stuff, they make menus just to anticipate them, okay? I mean, I had one relative that got, this is before I was born, but I had one relative get so excited about Thanksgiving that their acid reflux or whatever just worked them up, and then they couldn't eat the meal. Like, they had to wait 20 minutes before they could eat the meal because they got so excited looking at the Thanksgiving dinner spread. So, yeah, food's a big deal, even though I don't look
That's 30% of your salivary and stomach acid production, by, I'm pretty sure, just looking at food. But that's funny. That was enough to set him off.
Yeah, there you go. You know, you should talk to an NFL player about that sometime. See what they think of your medical facts.
I think nobody cares about what I learned in the first year of medical school. So many ticky-tacky facts, Mark, that I'm never going to use again unless I go into, you know, if I went into digestive health, maybe I'd go talk about that. But, you know, my gut says I won't be pulling out that fact again for some time.
Well, I think many people are going to care about what you have to say. So, if they do, where can they find them on Twitter?
You guys can follow me at John H. Crumpler. Plenty of content to come as we start ramping up towards the season. And, Mark, can I announce this? I think I can announce this.
No, let's wait till it's
all
in
right,
the boat.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Mark, where can they find you on Twitter?
At The Real Mark Lane. You can find The Texans Wire at The Texans Wire. Hey, subscribe to us, The Texans Talk Podcast, on Apple, Spotify, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And, you know, hey, make it your notifications. What better way to wake up at 5:30 in the morning Central Time than to The Texans Talk Podcast?
You can't forget, make The Texans Wire your homepage. Press F5. Mark, you usually say that. You forgot it today.
That's right. I usually do. So have a good morning, folks.
Peace, everybody.